yesterday morning, I just happened to be thinking of a verse that came to mind. The verse is Psalms 125:2, and it says, "As the mountains are round about Jerusalem, so the Lord is round about His people, from this time forth and forevermore." And I think that's very true here. Our speaker this morning is John Crawford, and he's speaking on a disciple as a learner. Mr. Crawford?
Thank you. I'm surely enjoying the time with you, and these days particularly. Is everybody comfortable? You warm enough? You're too warm. Too warm. Too warm. Yeah, I believe we are. Got some. I thought maybe because you was from Oklahoma, you might be warmer than me. That need it warmer than me. But maybe we ought to do something, Jack. You know, I don't know what you do, but do something. Just a little bit. Just a suggestion, by the way, and it might seem kind of silly, but if you are a type person who would like a little warmer, select your seat toward the middle of the room and up toward the front. If you'd like a little cooler, select it toward one of the areas where we can use for ventilation. So often, year after year, and as you get older, dear souls who like it warm will sit by the window, you know, and those who like it hot will sit in and so on. So, you know, we're talking, that's our subject this morning, disciple is a learner. So, think. Even where you select your seat, you see, have some reason about it. I hope you're all feeling good. Did I tell you about the fellow who got a job at the circus? At least I hadn't told you this week, have I? At least he's trying to get a job at the circus. And he went to the circus manager, and the fellow had his office in a trailer right by the circus grounds. And the young fellow asked him for a job, and he said, "Well, what do you do?" He said, "Well, I'm a high diver." He said, "Oh," he said, "I got a high diver." He said, "I got a boy that dives off a 50-foot tower into a tank of water." He said, "Well, my act's different than that." "Well, what do you do?" He says, I dive off a 200-foot tower." "Yeah, thank you. We got it real fast in El Paso County. It's got a good air conditioning system. Comes right off of Pike's Peak." You can probably close it now. That's fast. Where were we? Oh, yeah. He says, "I dive off a 200-foot tower in a pile of sand." So the circus operator thought he might have something here. So he had the boys erect a huge pile of cone-shaped sand, you know, and build a tower. And this old boy got up there with his leather suit and leather cap, and they got the band out and the fanfare and brrr, you know. And sure enough, he sailed off of there in a ball, and he came down and he hit that cone of sand and run the ball and just rolled right out across the circus lot quite a ways. And the circus manager, you know, ran up to him, and he got up, and he was brushing himself off. And he thought, "This is terrific. Man, I'll pack him in." He says, "Man," he says, "this is great. Give you $500 a week." Oh, boy, the diver said, "No." He kept brushing himself off, and he said, "$600 a week." He said, "No." Brushing himself off. He said, "$700. He said, "No." He said, "Man," he says, "what do you want? This is the greatest act ever. Give you $1,000 a week." He said, "No." He said, "It's the first time I tried it. I don't feel so good." Well, I hope you feel good. Now, I'm laboring under the supposition that you're getting a lot of Bible, a lot of challenges, a lot of application. Is that true this week? That's true. All right. Today is going to be a quite practical nature. And I don't know just how far along I get. I may get, according to the Gospels of Principles and Problems of Naval Leadership. And I usually use the Gospel according to the Reader's Digest and wherever else I get my material. But this is what I want to bring out. You want to learn. Now, let me share with you some stuff that Waldron Scott sent home. Waldron Scott has always sent home potent stuff everywhere he's been. And he's been overseas, I guess, all of his life. Waldron is our continental director for Asia. And here, Waldron Scott has called to our attention an article in International Review of the Missions, January 1970, by Mr. Settletone, called The Missionary and His Task. And this missionary is in Africa, youth work. Okay, listen, this is what he says. A question which is very typical today, because of the turbulent state of receiving end of missions, is, what are the elements of moral character required in the would-be missionary? Now, I always like to keep myself in the category of a would-be missionary, whether or not I ever go to Africa or Asia or even back to Alabama. Understand they need missionaries back there. But we are missionaries. Wherever we are, we're missionaries. I think it's good to keep this in mind. So do make the personal application whether or not you ever leave Oklahoma again. These are the qualities present in the individual in the training and preparation of missionaries will develop to fruition in maturity. This is in Edinburgh, 1910, lists these. In other words, the peculiar grace that belongs to a teachable spirit. This way back in 1910, they wanted this in their missionaries. The peculiar grace that belongs to a teachable spirit. One is gentleness. Sweet reasonableness. This is in Philippians 4:5. Let your sweet reasonableness be known unto all men. The Lord is at hand. And I don't know whether the Lord is at hand in coming back real soon, or Lord is at hand meaning He's ever present. He's always with us. But that's the Spirit. It is the root of adaptability. The spirit of courtesy which produces the right attitude to alien races. Strange customs, unfamiliar conditions of life, and sympathy described as the secret of personal influence, the power that wins, in current jargon, sensitivity. Now, I got this stuff somewhat loosely bailed up here. I don't know just how far we get. You know, gang, I work with kids. I call them kids. They're kids to me. And I have for years. Some time ago, Jim, what's our boy in Brazil? Jim Peterson was going to Brazil and he's going on a ship. Had 112 people on this ship. Oh, well, how long has he been there? Six, 7 years? 7, 8 years. On this ship, 60% or 60 people, would be about the same, were missionaries. There's a young couple by the name of Bells, who were graduate students, are working on their doctorate in Stanford, you know, down the peninsula from San Francisco. Young fellow and his wife, they were from the upper middle or top class of our society. And they were taking a trip to South America. Jim and his wife mingled with these folks, being hardcore evangelists, not because they were navigators, but because they were who they were. They began to talk to these people. And the thing that was amazing to Jim was these missionaries were not talking to the people aboard ship. Here they had them, a captive audience for, you know, several days. Well, Jim talked to Bell and his wife, and they made a decision for Christ. As far as I know, they were non-churched, didn't know anything about it. When they came back to the Bay Area, Northern California, the Bells were instructed to call John and Helen Crawford and make yourself known. So they called us and said, hey, we were on ship with Peterson's going down to Brazil, and it was our summer cruise and so on. And we said, wonderful, could you bring us up to date? And we invite them over for dinner. And they were babes in Christ. Bell told me, he said, John, most of those missionaries won't make it. Now, he came to this conclusion before he was converted. He hadn't been converted for just 2 or 3 weeks. But he came to this conclusion. He was an educated man. He was working on his doctorate, or maybe he had his doctorate by then. He says, the reason, he says, most of those people are from the Midwest, Kansas and Iowa and so on, see? And they have decided they don't like Portuguese food. He said, it seemed to me the most stupid thing in the world to be going to Brazil where settled by the Portuguese in this particular section of the country, and have already decided that you don't like the chow, the food. I said, it sure does to me too, you know. And he says, they won't make it. Because you go to fellowship with the people and you decide you don't want the food, even before you got to the continent. Now somebody blew the war. They hadn't been to somebody's training program on you know. Well, the setup is, you know, and I get these kids all the time. I was born and raised in Kansas and so on, and boy, I was back there from Missouri, you gotta show me, boy, and we eat beef back there, and we have boiled potatoes, and we have sour cream on them. Mean potatoes. And you pass them something like an avocado, which is a very delicious vegetable or that you use for a real fruit, real salad. It costs you a lot of money, but you got to cultivate a taste for it. But I don't like that. Why don't you like it? Because I was raised on suckers that the doctor gave me to bribe me to go, raised on candy. I was raised on hamburgers and milkshakes. And now then pizza. You see, I have decided that I like what I... This is just an illustration. I like pizza too. Am I communicating? I'd like to get really off and get running right away. I'd like to get your dander up. I'd like to get to you right away. Honestly. And here, Bell says they won't make it as missionaries. You know what? I think he's right. Okay. It is the root of adaptability, the spirit of courtesy which produces the right attitude to alien races, strange custom, unfamiliar conditions of life. When I first went to San Francisco, one of the first things I did learn how to use chopsticks. When I was in Japan, I've only been to Japan once, it was last year, and I had, you know, read a little book and could use chopsticks and could adapt into the customs there, and our key fellow there took me out for dinner, and I made up my mind 20 years ago that I like all strange foods. I just decided that I did. In fact, in those days I liked them too much and I got fat, but I just decided. It was in my mind. See? I decided. Because for the gospel of Jesus Christ, I thought that I could change my country backwater ways of Alabama. Not that I frown on those people or frown on myself or frown on my relatives. But I just decided that there's other ways to live besides the backwater ways that we live down in Alabama. They're just the other side of the tracks. There's at least two sides, sometimes as many as six. You know that. Box has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Just one box has 6. You can make it 8, 10, 12, 15. You can make all kinds of sides, you know? Couldn't you? All kinds of sides. Am I communicating? Do you like this? You don't like it? I don't care. Strange customs, unfamiliar conditions of life. See? We frown on things. My, we have one of the most golden opportunities in our country. So-called, quote, minority groups. They're not minority groups at all. You and I are the minority group. 6% of the people in the world live in the United States and have over half the world's goods. If you're white or light-complected, you're a minority group. Most of the people are dark. Most of the people, of course, are Asians, or Asian descent, or dark, or brown, or black. In fact, what is it now? One out of every, how many people in the world are Chinese? One out of every three? Is that it? Five? Huh? Anyway, Helen and I have two, and we quit, because we didn't want the next to be Chinese. Can see I'm not even going to get to my message, much less the doctrine of training naval leadership. I'm not even going to get through this paper, it doesn't look like. I've read this to everybody that I got, everybody since I got it, that I can read it to. I get on a message and I preach it all the time. Not a bad idea, particularly when you're limited to just a few messages. Unfamiliar conditions of life and sympathy. You see, these, you have an opportunity to learn from your neighbor or from a group in your town or community. One of the most neglected races in the world, as far as I know, is whom? One of the most neglected races. Do you know what it is? What? What? No, I'm talking about of the human race. Huh? No. What group of people probably are could be exposed to one of the most enlightenment, but perhaps the most neglected? What group of people? Do you know? American Indian. American Indian. Why, there's some sections of the American Indian that don't have their language in written form yet. They're translating their language to written form. Right here in affluent America. My, opportunities are around us, aren't they? Disciple as a learner. Now, that's the topic. Don't forget the... The power that wins. These are still the qualities by which missionaries are judged in the future. They fail or succeed according to how little or how much of these qualities are communicated in their daily contacts. In these days when the era of the old missionary with his paternalistic tendencies has grown much in disfavor, another brand of missionary fills his place. We condemn the old ones for their sins, but the new ones could be much worse. For is there a greater sin as great, for is there a sin as great as the lack of knowledge of our human shortcomings, lack of humility? The young men and women who leave the Western Hemisphere to offer their services abroad, both as missionaries and other forms of expatriate, well, hard word at work, do not possess this grace, whatever other qualities they may have. Missionaries tell us that we going over now don't possess this grace. You may have a lot of other qualities. You may be brilliant. You may be technologically far superior than anybody else. But people don't want that. You know, one of the reasons that many of the Biafrans were starving, the food was over here, and to get the food up to, over to the Biafrans, you had to go across some Nigerian property. Nigeria said, okay, sure, go ahead, go across there and take it to these people who are starving. So they did. They took it over here, and the Biafrans were so proud because they had to bow to the grace of their enemy, they wouldn't accept the food, and one chieftain who did accept the food for his people had his limbs removed by his own people. So it's not technology. It's not abundance of good. It's understanding human nature. And you and I have gotten angry or mad and done the same stupid things. We've hurt ourselves and others simply because of our feelings. Now, the missionary says, this isn't the best attitude to go to the field with. Do not possess this grace, whatever other qualities they have. We are, the heroes of the romantic, gallant knight who think they have the power to set things right. And right means according to their inherited concepts. Surely, something is wrong with their education, training, formal or informal, which allows people to form such views of themselves and others. Western man still has a tremendous long way to go before he can fully see himself as man other than human species on this planet with other human species. Because of his first start in a technological material race, he often thinks or behaves as if he can learn nothing much from others. So endeth the reading of the missionary. This should set us in a frame of mind. One thing I want you to pick up this morning is one word called balance. B-A-L-A-N-C. Balance. And here's a verse that you can memorize. I don't know how it is in the more recent translations, but in the King James, it's Luke 2:52. It's still Luke 2:52 in the others too, of course, but Luke 2:52. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. Four ways that we develop. Jesus increased in wisdom. What would be a synonym for wisdom? What would be another word for wisdom? Knowledge. It's another one. Fine? Truth, yes. Understanding? Intelligence? Good. Okay, Jesus increased in these ways. Wisdom. Stature. What does that mean? Physical. And it's not limited strictly to physical, but all that develops in the natural man. These increase in wisdom and stature and in favor with God. What would that be? Spiritual. Spiritual growth. And all of its aspects. And man, what would that be? Social. So this gets you the balance with which we'd like to grow. Balance. Balance is one of the major emphases in the navigators. At least it should be. It should be in all of our lives. Without balance, well, the whole apple cart is upset. Someone has said the seeds of doubt, or is it death, lie dormant in the strong part of every life or work. Your ability to fail coincides with your ability to succeed. A strong man's point often becomes his weak point. A man's strong point, rather, often becomes his weak point. If God has given you something, keep it in proper balance. Some illustrations. Rich man has power to gain friends, but he loses them by being stingy. My brother-in-law was a football player, and early in his athletic career, he developed a heart murmur. He was able to, with much care and with much medication, live to 50, and he died from the same ailment. He overdid it, they say. He was a good football player, scholarship in college. David Brainerd's strong point was his willingness to sacrifice. He died of tuberculosis in his youth. Exposure. Beautiful woman. Christian girl, attractive. The ability to win friends and work with other kids, in particular high school girls. What's her problem? Vanity. Pride. Man who has courage to drive a car, mechanic, speed demon, brave, can be the world's fastest dead hero. God is a God of balance. We have a man on our crew here that's has a master's in wildlife management. And predators have to be kept in check. If they're not, you have a problem. And sometimes everyone involved doesn't get the word. I was reading an article some time ago where they had a bounty on wolves in Alaska. $50. Go out and shoot a wolf and they pay you $50 for it. That was the law, that was legislation. This article pointed out that this law and this legislation came from, I'll use the word mentality here, of lawmakers who were influenced by Little Red Riding Hood, the big bad wolf. The wildlife management people couldn't do anything about it, so on another island they raised wolves and turned them loose in this particular area simply because if they killed off the wolves, the elk and the caribou would change ranges and it would be a hindrance to both of them, but the wolves roamed this particular section right through here and kept the animals in balance. Last year we had a problem with the elk in Wyoming and they had to harvest quite a few of them, and I use the word harvest, people laugh at me. They say, you mean kill? Well, sure, if you want to use that word. But you know, the people were up in arms, killing those dear little elk. You're against motherhood or something. See? But the animals would starve because we have men with that studied this all of their life. And they've watched it year after year. This is a hobby of mine, reading these articles. You think, well, here's a little old deer, you know, and you feed the deer and you keep it alive, and that's wonderful. Only to die during the winter because it doesn't know how to forage for itself. Disciple is a learner. Everything that looks right isn't exactly right. You have to go behind the scenes. And God is a God of balance. The insecticides that we're using now, you know, kill some of the insects, some of the bad things, but they also kill some of the good things, and then things get out of balance. And very little is accomplished, in my book, by the populace rising up in arms, mob rule. Rabbits reproduce very fast. You know why? Why do rabbits reproduce fast? Anybody know? Huh? A little louder. That's right. Everything eats rabbits. Raccoons eat rabbits. Eagles eat rabbits. Owls eat rabbits. I eat rabbits. See? God has made it this way. Isn't it marvelous? Our earth is an earth of balance. Three-fourths of the earth's surface is covered by water, simply because if it was any different, why, we couldn't live here. Sun, I understand, has no other task than to heat the earth, and I learned in school that only 2% of the sun's energies are consumed by the earth. We breathe in oxygen, breathe out carbon dioxide. We need it. We need one, and the trees and plants need the other. Too much rain and flood, and so on. You can get your own illustrations. But back to our personal lives, and disciple is a learner. When you get out of a balance, you're in problems. Don't go hog wild on a point. You ever seen a hog go wild? Not a wild hog, hog wild. They're difficult to corner, difficult to catch. It's a lot of fun to try to see some boys catch a greased pig. A number of years ago, the YMCA started off, you know, balance of body and mind and spirit. Now then, what is the YMCA? Body. You got out of balance. Man, in order to be masculine, sometimes he becomes crude or brutal. Then he thinks, well, I should be gentle, so he becomes a sissy. But there's three things perhaps that should be worked on in our personal lives to keep balance. One is doctrine. What does the Bible teach? Now, differences usually become in the overemphasis or underemphasis of a point. I understand we have something like 27 different denominations of varieties of brethren. I don't know how many kinds of Baptists we got. Saxful, see? And oftentimes the differences come in a point that's being neglected, and then to get this point back, we overemphasize it. Now, I don't know how to do things sometimes, but I'll give you an illustration. In some areas of our society, we have been unfair to black people. We have not hired black people in proportion that we have white people. That's a fact. All right? And now then, in some places, the pressure... Say you had to hire 10 people and you hired 7 white and 3 black. And yet they were all qualified. Now then, to get the balance, we're pressured. Well, you got to make up for those sins of your fathers. So you hire 7 black and 3 white. Now when we hired 7 white and 3 black, the black man was infringed upon. Well, when you hire 7 black and 3 white, what happens? What? The white man is infringed upon. When you hired 7 black and 3 white and 3 black, the man who didn't get a fair shake, the black man was angry. So when you hire 7 black and 3 white, the white man that don't get a fair shake feels good. No, he's angry too. So we in society got 2 angry people. You see, 2 wrongs don't make a right. Now, I'm not giving you a solution to our civil problems. I'm just giving you illustrations. 2 wrongs don't make a right. So in our personal lives, really, really look to God for balance in your life. Now, some say, here's a pendulum.
kind of a crooked pendulum, but pendulum, see?
You know, here's a pendulum. It's swinging. All right, it swings too far over here. The tendency is to correct this. We let it swing too far over here, and this will balance it. Does this figure out, Jack? The only thing is that's wrong. If it's with God, if it's too far over here, bring it back to dead center and quit. You see?
If you say, there goes a great artist, you're wrong.
Anybody says anything cute, say it loud because I want to hear it. Okay. Let's suppose... How do you like those lines, boy? Isn't that great? When you eat peanut butter, you can't do that. Suppose this is a graph, see, like this, see? And this is, you know, well, like here. I want this to be the center right here. All right, now suppose those are straight lines and so on. You can suppose that, can't you? Oh, now here's God here. Now this has helped me tremendously. I mean, this has helped me. God is leading right down this line. Now, suppose I'm a rather spiritual man. You know, this is a heavy line. And these are units, increments, going this way. So, see? All right? I want to follow the Lord. But I get off over here, right here, see? And I'm working with a fella in committee in church or in evangelism or friend wife or employee or some setup in the Lord's work. And I'm just a little off here following the Lord. And he's off over here. And I get convicted about our problems. This could be in society. It can be any place. I get bothered about our problems. And I think, you know, I shouldn't feel like this. I want to get right. I don't want to live with problems. What'll I do? And I think, well, I'll just humble myself. And I'll just go over here and I'll just line up behind this old boy and we'll work together. In the Lord's work, will this work out? No. Won't. How many think it will? How many don't think it will? How many don't know what I'm talking about? Here's the way God is working. This is right. This is the center. I was off one step here. My buddy, friend, wife are working with old Max. He's off one, two, three, four steps. But I feel badly about it. So I go over here and line up behind him. Will this work? Yeah. Why? It's not God's plan, Ray. That's right. It's not God's plan. See? And God is no respecter of persons. Right is no respecter of persons. That which is forever morally right is always right. That which is forever wrong is always wrong. I'm speaking of morally now. So what I have to do, say this is friend wife here, we have a problem. What I have to do is I have to go right over here and line up behind God, hoping that she'll come over here one of these old second Tuesdays, you know. Or if I'm working with old Max and he's lost the victory. And the tendency is, well look, you know, I only have to go one step. I'm really closer than they are. You know, sometimes when you want to confess sin, you wish you could take the whole business. You wish you could make everything right and take it all on yourself, but you can't do that sometimes because you're not all that wrong. You have to make what right you have to, and others have to make what they have to, even if yours is only a teeny-weeny bit and theirs is a lot, or yours is a lot and theirs is a teeny-weeny, it really doesn't make any difference with God. God is no respecter of persons. Disciple is a learner. You got some questions here.
If you get this, you'll be worth your time this morning. Fellow Scotty, by the way, gave me this years ago. Having a problem with a fella, and he was an engineer, and I have a lot of problem with engineers. I have a problem with architects, and I have a problem with interior decorators. They're my worst. Because our personalities click, don't click. A fellow that has the capacity to be an interior decorator and creative and aesthetic and so on, you know, I have a problem getting him to get it off the board and let's get it on the walls or whatever we're going to do with it, you know. But a person that has a creative ability, and you know, that there's always just a little bit more that you can do to it. Just a little bit more. And it's true, you can always work on it. Well, if I'm the production man, I have to grab it and, you know, until that causes a problem. Questions here? Yes, sir. Well, no, this is where we work. This engineer and I, this is where God wanted both of us. See? And I think I was off, you know. But I really, honestly don't think I was off as far as he was. And as I counseled with others, they didn't think so either. See? And I really asked Scotty, why don't I give it up? Why don't I go over there and line up behind this old boy? Scotty says it won't work. So he's wrong. Now he's wrong. In fact, you both be worse because he's further off than you are. But if he said, well, look, John, I'll just come over and line up behind you, that'd also be wrong. You'd have to line up behind you. The disciple is a learner, see. Questions?
John, good verse in the Amplified Jeremiah 15:19.
Can you read that or quote it? Or?
Last part says, don't you return to them, let them return to you. And Jeremiah was separating the precious and vile things out of his own heart. He had shared the message. I'll read it. Therefore, thus saith the Lord to Jeremiah, if you return, give up this mistaken tone of distrust and despair, then I will give you again a settled place of quiet and safety, and you shall be my minister. And if you separate the precious from the vile, cleansing your own heart from unworthy suspicion concerning God's faithfulness, you shall be my mouthpiece. But do not yield to them. Let them return to you, not you to the people.
Good.
Is that
yeah. Yep. Our time's about gone. Two, three other illustrations in regard to doctrine and the balance on doctrine. Sometimes the idea comes, well, what'll I do? Follow man or God? And then, we want to follow the Lord. And so we break out such verses as in Acts 5, where Peter says it's better to obey God than to obey man. But it's also good to get some other verses on the other side of the ledger. Like such as 2 Corinthians 8:21, providing for honest things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of man. And to be accepted as a deacon, you have to have a good testimony in the sight of the non-Christian. So actually, it's his viewpoint of you whether or not you'd be accepted as a deacon in the church. You remember the three people that Jesus healed, the sight, he touched one, and then he spoke to one, and the third one he made some mud out of some clay, out of some spittle, and different ways that he healed these people. And one fellow pointed out that if he'd been here today, and he'd have done that today, we'd have started three different movements, or three different churches. One would be the Touchites, the other would be the Speakites, the other would be the Muddites. In the early days of the Navigators, we insisted that a work of faith was a work that you didn't let your needs be known. You did not tell anyone that you had any kind of financial or material need. If you did, you would be severely, severely scolded. You could only tell God. You couldn't even hint. You couldn't even hint in a letter. That's the way we interpreted faith. Others interpreted faith differently. They said it's still a work of faith if you do let your needs be known. And they had verses in the Bible where Paul let his needs be known. And we changed. So relax on this business of finding some particular truth in the Bible. And God has revealed it just to you. This one little particular truth. And go hog wild on this particular point. Well, the time is up, and thus endeth the reading of the lesson. Thank you. Yes. Ministry and the life. You know, in the ministry, it has to be a ministry of balance. In our zeal to get out the word, we can use improper technique, not balanced or baptized, immersed in love. In our life, we can have the prayer and the word, two potent things in the life, but that produces monasteries. And sometimes when you want to study the Word, or you have just a little bit of time to do Bible study or any other type of study, and someone interrupts you, you might be like an old buddy of mine. He used to think when he's studying his Bible, and some of us would come up and ask him some question, and he'd say, "Go away, leave me alone. Go away, I want to study my Bible so I won't be like this." Okay? Thank you.